Hey, kids, you're listening to A Couple of Annoyed Grumpoys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast.
Leonard Bernstein!
Leonard, what's his name? Herman Munster, Motorcade, Birthday Party, Cheetos, Poker Sticks, and Lemonade, you symbiotic stupid jerks, that's right, Flanders, I am talking about you!
That's right, we're the Simpsons Podcast that discusses the beloved animated sitcom The Simpsons from seasons 11 and beyond, and the newest ones when in the air. Why do we do it this way? Well, there's plenty of other podcasts out there that have discussed the Golden Age, that being seasons 1 through 10, so we're tasked to find if any episodes from the newer seasons can match those Golden Age episodes. And I say we, because I'm just one annoyed grunt boy named Craig, and with me, as always, is the other annoyed grunt boy.
Hey, it's Steve.
Hello, Steve. You have some important information to relay to our fans. And an apology, maybe? I think you need to go on an apology tour.
I think so. I've done the world wrong, and I need to atone for my misdeeds.
Yes, misdeeds is not the sex worker you hired, but something that you've done for our listeners, right?
That's right. Misdeeds does do some fine work, but we're not here to talk about them. So in recent weeks or years, I don't know, time is weird these days, as it always has been, we've been covering the Billboard charts to explore kind of what was going on when the episode that we're reviewing aired. And so for the longest time, we just did the number one movie in the box office and the Billboard Hot 100. Recently, we've kind of expanded that to explore other charts, to explore other flavors of music, such as the alternative Hot 100, the country Hot 100, and the dance electric Hot 100. And this has all been great, except for I began to notice, and I think we both noticed, that the song Scream and Shout by Britney Spears and will.i.am seemed to pop up a lot. And also the song Know Your Enemy by the band Green Day also appeared frequently. And I know that Scream and Shout was a very popular song, and as somebody who does not necessarily default to listen to that genre of music, I was like, sure, why not? That was popular. But doing research on this episode, I discovered something. And that something is that the Billboard Hot 100 for Dance and Electric was started in the year 2013. And so if you go to the Billboard website and type in the date prior to that, like this episode that we're reviewing today, which took place in November of 2001... it'll just go straight to the first of that chart, which was in 2013, which is Scream and Shout by Britney Spears and will.i.am. Same with the alternative chart, which was started in 2011, which is also weird because alternative music by 2011, I feel like it pretty much died down, at least in the mainstream. And so I don't know why they're starting it then. You would have thought it would start in like the 90s, but that's neither here nor there. As I've done with this week, I looked up the number one song on those charts before. They're called the Hot 100. And I've corrected myself for this week, but I do want to say I'm sorry for any confusion. I know how much you listeners wait with bated breath to know what the number one song of the hot electric dance music from, let's say, 2014 was, and you rely on us for that information. So truly, I apologize. I hope that with some time and some work and some understanding, we can move beyond this and rebuild our relationship as podcaster and listener. And so I'm truly, truly sorry.
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
Do I get fired?
No, no, no. You have to stay on the podcast even longer.
Ah, damn. That's worse
than it's in your contract. Yeah. I just feel bad for all of our listeners that were at their fancy $1,000 plate cocktail parties, you know? With the information all the time, telling their rich friends like Bill and Melinda Gates and Warren Buffett about the Hot 100 songs. And now they're made a fool. It's all your fault, Steve.
I imagine that somebody was at a dinner party and they're like, I want to get this new promotion at my office job. And then they're like, oh, Mr. Willington, don't you know that Scream and Shout was the number one song in 2009? And Mr. Willington's like, pah, 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 pah. Why, sir, don't you know that that song came out in 2013? This is embarrassing. You will not get office job. You'll have to go back to the mailroom, as I understand offices to be. Mailroom is worst. And then that was it.
And then their life goes downhill, and then they put all of their possessions in a little hanky and make a little bindle.
Mm-hmm.
And they put their hands over a a fire by a train station that's in a little metal garbage can, and they live on the streets now.
Yep, they eat cans of beans with the lid flipped open, and wear boots with the toes exposed. They play a harmonica for some reason.
Yeah, so sorry about that, listeners, but thanks for still listening to our podcast.
Yeah, that was the one reason not to.
Yeah. Well, Steve, let's see if we can course correct your horrible anus mistakes. You give the annoyed grunt boys a reason to hang their heads in shame. We're the shame boys now.
Oh, boy. Yep.
The annoyed shame boys. Steve, let's just get into this week's episode, all right?
All righty.
So we're going to go back to the year 2001 when this episode aired, specifically the week of November 18th. Steve, what were all of our eyes watching on the big old screen, the silver screen in a local theater? See, what film were we watching?
Well, it was the beginning of a series that at the time was well-regarded and now maybe a little bit less so due to the author. The number one movie in the box office was Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, or for our UK listeners, the Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Did you see this one in the theaters?
I don't think I did, because I think it was around probably the third or the fourth book or series that like I started getting into them, and I feel like this had already come out by then. I did see it eventually, and I've seen all of them since, but I think at this time I was not yet into them. How about yourself?
Yeah, same. I just had that assumption that, oh, these are kids' books.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to see this kids' movie. And here I am just like waiting for like Star Wars Episode 2, which is, you know, all Star Wars is kids' movies.
Right,
I'm
right.
Told. I'm waiting for my Star Wars to come out. But yeah, it wasn't until I think you started reading them, right? And then that I got hooked onto them because you had a girlfriend at the time that liked the books.
Yeah.
And she was of age. She was a little kid.
It's true.
I know people give like the first Harry Potter a lot of crap, but like it's literally a kid's movie. Chris Columbus directs it. John Williams does the music. What can you ask for? You
right. Know? I think that it's good for what it is. And like it's a really good introduction to the series.
Yeah, it's not the best book either, but like it's how you think start things out. Like I've read them and then watched the movie, and like I don't have much complaints. I think they did a great job for what they do. So I feel like that first movie gets a lot of slack. It's kids acting too. Like,
yeah,
what do you guys want? What do you guys want?
Ugh. And also, I think that Daniel Radcliffe like has grown up to become a great actor. He's like made some really interesting choices. Same with obviously Emma Watson. And, you know, it's great that they could, like, become stars in their own right, thanks to that film.
What, no love for Rupert Grint?
He's good, too. I mean, I loved him in Thing. Yeah. All right, Craig. Well, we were watching, or not watching, Harry Potter do his magic thing that he do. What were we listening to on the radio?
Well, it was Mary J. Blige with Family Affair. That was the number one song of the Hot Billboard 100.
Exciting. Family Affairs. Frowned upon in most of the country, but, you know, in the South, they're good with it.
I was probably rocking to that song, but you were probably rocking to the number one hot rock alternative song because it's your favorite band, right?
Oh, yes. Canada's own Nickelback with How You Remind Me.
We make fun of Creed and Nickelback, but Nickelback is from Canada?
Nickelback Canadian, Creed Floridian.
It's the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And then Red Hot Chili Peppers Californian, which is pretty bad, too.
Yeah, they're bad. But at least they tell you where they're from in every single song.
And Steve, after watching all the Simpsons episodes, how would you describe your emotions?
Well, it's much like the number one song on the Country Hot 100. I'm angry all the time, much like the song Angry All the Time by Tim McGraw.
Tim McGraw's a person? I thought that was a Taylor Swift song.
I thought it was a the cousin of Quick Draw. The horse with the guns.
Yeah.
But Craig, while I was angry all of the time, what were you rhythmically moving to? Not so angry, hopefully.
Well, that's impressive. Instant by British lady herself, Madonna, who's never used a filter on Instagram.
Oh, no, never.
Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize for commenting on someone's looks. But Madonna, age gracefully. There's a lot of people that age gracefully. You don't have to
it's fine.
Act like you're in your 20s. In fact, you look weirder.
Yeah, we know how old you are. It's okay.
Yeah, you've been around since the 70s in one form or the other. You
know? Yeah, exactly.
Music, 80s, but well, that is an impressive instant of music. Steve, let's get on with this week's episode. We are talking about Homer the Mo, And Mo turns the bar into a hangout for Springfield's beautiful people, forcing Homer to start a bar of his own inside his garage or car hole. All right, Steve, let's go ahead and take a break, come back, and discuss said episode.
Sounds great.
All right, we'll be right back. And we're back. Today we're talking about Homer the Mo, the third episode of the 13th season, originally aired November 18th, 2001. It's episode 272 of the show's run. The nerd code is CABF20, written by Dana Gould, directed by Jen Kamerman, and your showrunner is Mike Scully.
Alrighty, Dana Gould. He's a stand-up comedian, an actor, writer, and voice artist. He's been on The Simpsons several times as a voice actor as well as a writer. He was the co-executive producer from season 12 to season 19. He's got three children, all adopted from China, which was the inspiration for Goo Goo Guy Pan, which he wrote under the pseudonym Lawrence Talbot. Most recently, he's been known as the host of the YouTube series Hanging with Dr. Z, in which he does celebrity interviews as Dr. Zaius, from the Planet of the Apes movie series. Quick description of that show. Hang out with the showbiz legend Dr. Z as he recounts his fabulous career in a name-dropping chat fest with Hollywood pals, from the Rat Pack to the Ramones, Jerry Lewis to Jay-Z, Billy Barty to Billie Eilish. The Doctor knows them all and isn't shy about spilling tea. Created by Dana Gould, Robert Cohen, and Pete Aronson, Hanging with Dr. Z is the Darwinian comedy you didn't know you needed until now.
Does that mean Billie Eilish was on his show?
I think they just know of Billie Eilish, but like they usually have like UCB comedy nerds and like different celebrity guests. I've seen a little bit of it. It has very much kind of a space ghost a little bit. He's just having a lot of fun being Dr. Zaius and interviewing people.
I get this confused with the George Lucas show. I know it's two different things, but like, isn't the George Lucas talk show in a similar like comedy sense?
Absolutely. I was thinking the exact same thing. Like they're both kind of the same kind of spirit, same kind of vibe. They both have like a cast of characters who are dressed up as other characters. Connor Ratliff plays George Lucas, and you know, there's Watto and a bunch of other Star Wars adjacent characters. And this has a lot of Planet of the Apes adjacent characters. So I'd say that this is almost probably a more Gen X version of the George Lucas talk show, so it might skew to a slightly older audience, people in their 50s, but yeah.
True, because Dr. Zaius, that came out, you know, or the movie Planet of the Apes came out in, like, what, 68, 69?
Mm-hmm.
And then the Star Wars in the late 70s. What's going to be the next generation's, or the Gen Zers had their Dr. Zaiuses, the millennials had their George Lucas's, you know, Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then who's after the millennials? The
Gen Z.
The Gen Z. Is it going to be probably something like from Marvel, right? Like,
yeah.
Someone's going to dress up as Tony Stark and it's going to be the Iron Man talk show.
I could see that.
Just doing a Robert Downey Jr. impersonation.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you could have like, you know, some guy playing Thor and, you know, MORDOK, the weird head guy?
The head guy?
Yeah.
It'll just be Patton Oswalt.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see that Dana Gould was married to Sue Nagel, who was a former president of HBO.
Mm-hmm.
It made me like always wonder why that one season of Sopranos that Dana Gould was playing Tony Soprano. Now I know why, because he was married to Sue Nagel, right?
Yeah, makes sense, yeah.
Former president of HBO Entertainment.
Mm-hmm. He's also starring in like six episodes of Sex and the City. He just replaced Samantha for no reason.
Yeah. No, he was all four of the ladies.
I love
wearing different wigs. That one season where he was Larry David,
mm-hmm,
and Leon, but they had to like really scrap those episodes because he was in blackface.
Exactly. Yeah. And like he played both the cops and the criminals on The Wire. And people thought it was very good and told other people, you got to watch it. But nobody really did, but everybody pretended like they did.
Dana Gould. Yeah. He's, it's kind of crazy. He's one of those, I think, comedians that, like, even now has, like, the second generation of fans.
Yeah.
Because he's been around since, like, the 90s, and just one of those, like, 90s comedians that just has constantly been, like, reinventing themselves or just having, like, a, a great career in comedy, even if it's like a niche career, right?
Yeah, I think it's really impressive. You mentioned Patton Oswalt, and I feel like Patton Oswalt, Dana Gould, and Paula Tompkins are all kind of about that same generation where, you know, you expect them to just be a certain kind of stand-up comedian, and that's all that they can do, and then they'd fade away. But then they all found their own kind of, like you say, niche career in their own right, you know, finding their own interests. And I think it's really cool that they can kind of form things into the modern age and create their own voice. So very cool.
Very cool indeed. All right, Steve, should we just get on with this week's episode?
Sure. This is actually the first episode of The Simpsons that Dana Gould is credited as writing. He's written a total of 7 episodes. This is the 4th that we've written. The other 3 are President Wore Pearls, the Eva Perón parody with Lisa as the musical. We have Goo Goo Guy Pan, which I mentioned, which is about Selma or Patty or Selma adopting a baby from China. And then we also have I Don't Want to Know Why the Cage Bird Sings, which we reviewed in February of this year. Or of last year, actually. Wow, time flies.
Much like birds, Steve.
Indeed.
Because birds watch TV just like us, from what I hear. So a little trivia before we get going, Steve. If you guys notice, like, our title for this episode and episode guides, wiki, all of them say this episode is called Homer the Mo. Even here on the DVD, it's Homer the Mo. But for some reason, you could go on your little Disney Plus here, it says Homer to the Mo.
Very weird.
You know what that means, Steve.
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
And since it's Disney, who's the top entity at Disney, Steve?
Well, that's got to be Mr. Michael Mouse himself.
Yep. Instead of firing him, Steve, I'm just going to put a little mouse trap with some cheese down and we'll kill the mouse.
I like it.
And then, Steve, you can finally date his widow.
Yeah. Minnie. Hey. Meet Minnie. Yeah, I'm checking to see if it's Homer Max or Homer to the Max.
Oh, that's good. Well, Steve researches that real quick. I'm going to let you guys know on the chalkboard gag here. And it's Bart writing a burp. In a jar is not a science project. So I imagine he did that. He burped into a jar, closed it, and then handed it to Mrs. Krabappel there. And, you know, she's like, I'm not going to open this and smell your burp. Gross. That's it. That's not a science project. You're grounded. I mean, you have detention. That's embarrassing. That's almost as embarrassing as calling one of your teacher's mom one time. Oh, man, that's the worst.
Oh, so embarrassing.
Yeah, so that's the way to stay after and write on the chalkboard.
That makes sense. For the record, it is Homer to the Max from season 10, not Homer Max or Homer.
I bet that was it. I bet that was the reasoning is they wrote Homer to the Mo and someone wrote Homer to the Max and they were just like, we don't want you to type anymore. So just get rid of the AX and put an OE at the end of M. You're good.
Yeah, they probably had like some AI software just like Homer to the male M name.
Yeah, we solved it. All right, Steve, let the internet know that the Simpsons solvers have solved it again.
That's right. We're the Simpsons solvers. We solved that one Simpson thing last week.
This is fun. This will be our new side hustle.
I like it. Yeah. We do have a couch gag in which a football is thrown in the center of the living room and the Simpsons family, dressed as football players, tackle each other for the ball. Maggie squirms out of the ball in hand, spikes it, and does a little victory dance while squealing with delight. This is actually the second time we've seen this, the first being season 12, Skinner Sense of Snow, which we discussed in our 203rd episode way back in December of 2022.
Well, Steve, our episode begins, as it always does, at the breakfast table. While flipping through the morning paper there, Homer is amused by the bridge column and that wacky South. You'll never know what he'll do next. He flips the page to find the Drabble comic and the dad of said comic, which Homer considers to be just an unfunny version of himself. Steve, I don't know if I don't have a grandmother, but like bridge was a popular card game that my grandmother would play, and newspapers were a popular form of entertainment for grandparents.
Indeed.
Do they have? I don't know why I'm asking you. I'm not assuming you pick up a newspaper, but I wonder if they still put like the bridge information in newspapers. And what exactly is? I never understood bridge as a card game or
yeah,
what is it? Why do you need a newspaper? Like, is there some sort of magical lottery type of number that you got to put into your cards? What is bridge?
Yeah, it's baffling to me because as a kid I loved the newspaper, especially what in our area of the in the Oregonian, which is obviously the Oregon's premier newspaper, there is the quote-unquote living section, and in the back there'd be the comic strips, which I was obsessed with, and also the word games, because I love crossword puzzles and jumbles and all that. And so every day I would go and I'd like look at the crossword, look at the jumble, and eventually, you know, the Sudoku, like all the little word games. And then in that section, there'd always be the bridge section. And I wasn't sure what to do with that, because I don't, like you say, I don't know if it's an ongoing game that readers are supposed to play along with, or if it's just like some sort of really boring D&D where the writer is like a dungeon master for all the players. I don't even know how bridge works. I think you play against, like, you're playing with the person across from you, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
Remember my grandma always had, you know, her weekly bridge games. And the last time I saw, like, anything about bridge was, like, season 3 of Fargo. That one of the Ian McGregor and Mary Elizabeth Winstead, their characters played bridge. But, I mean, I could Google it, but I just feel like I don't want to.
I tried to Google bridge and forget the bleak.
Sorry, Baltimore. That was tragic. It's interesting, yeah. Maybe that's the cards you're supposed to play. I don't.
Yeah. Also, I feel like I had never, like, we never got Drabble, the comic strip, but it's been going since 1979.
Don't even know what that is.
Yeah, so I did a quick research, and so the main character, who Homer thinks is an funny version of himself, is the father of the family, and he worked initially as a pro wrestler and then later as a mall cop. And since then, he's been a retirement village security guard, a TSA screener, and a park ranger.
So very Homer-like, getting different jobs all the time.
Mm-hmm. He also had to get his cholesterol checked, and he's married to a woman named June, who is very responsible.
Oh, look, I'm looking at pictures of the dad now. He's got the belly. He's bald with a little hair on the sides, and is there a little hair on the top?
Yeah, I can see that.
Maybe it was an East Coast thing, right?
Could be, yeah.
Yeah, comic strips that the Portland metro area thought were deemed too irresponsible for the people of Oregon to read.
Yeah, we could barely handle our Foxtrots and our Beetle Baileys and our Mother Gooses and Grimm. Mother Geese and Grimm? I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Lisa notices that Bart is missing from breakfast and that his morning Mountain Dew is getting flat. Marge looks outside to see Bart digging. Homer assumes that he's digging for drugs, but when Marge says that there's no drugs out there, Homer's like, yeah, there's no drugs out there.
Homer's hiding drugs. We learned last week he's had anonymous hookups with men. Or I believe he is. You don't think so.
Possible.
I mean, all right. Yeah. I wonder what drugs he has back there.
Soon.
It's probably innocent. He probably just stole some old people's drugs from the retirement center when he visits Grandpa.
Yeah, maybe like some Lipitor or something, like some heart medication for himself.
Well, he does need heart medication, Steve.
True.
Lisa is sure that if Bart was digging for a school project, she would know about it. Just like, you know, when we were kids, we knew about our siblings' homework. Yeah. So she decides to check on her brother. And so she goes outside to ask him what he's doing. He responds like, digging. And so she asks why, and Bart simply replies, making a hole. And she learns that the hole is for more digging. And Bart digs and digs throughout the day, and Homer is determined to find out what he's up to, since he believes that kids shouldn't have secrets.
Oh, hello, young man. Beautiful day for digging, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Digging for anything in particular?
Nuh-uh.
So, I guess you wouldn't mind if I was to dig a hole of my own?
Go for it.
Maybe I will.
What's stopping you?
Very little. I'm having chest pains. Where's the defibrillator? Clear! This thing pays for itself.
Bart, this is Dr. Kaufman. He's a special kind of talking doctor.
Call me Bob. Well, that's quite a hole you're digging.
Thanks, Bob.
You know, a hole's a great place to hide when people are fighting. Are there angry people in your house?
My dad's always yelling that Whitey's keeping him down.
I see.
I remember this scene, and I always confused it with an episode from season 11, the second episode of season 11, Bart's Little Helper, in which Bart gets on ADHD medication and goes a little crazy, and he has that crazy look in his eye that he has there. And I don't know why, but like for some reason, this gives me the same kind of vibes as that.
Yeah, and in my instance, I don't really remember this. Like I was asking like how to describe this episode last week. And I mean, I knew the plot, but then rewatching, I'm like, I kind of forgot all of this.
Yeah.
Like for me, like I only remember the third act. So to see this, I'm like, huh, Mark McGuire's not coming to the end of this episode, is he? That's a different episode. So I'm kind of the same way with you. Like, remember that episode? Yeah.
Yeah, it's really weird.
I just love how Homer just coming in and just like, yeah, mind if I do some digging too?
It's good, like, parent psychology. They'll be like, hey, let me join with you so you'll stop doing it. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, help me out. Sure, why not? And isn't Whitey trying to keep everybody down?
It's a very funny line.
Day turns to night, and Bart continues to dig in the backyard. Lisa warns him that if he keeps on digging, he'll go straight through to China. And if that happens, it happens, Bart says. The camera then pans up to a space station with a satellite that has a kind of a pagoda roof. And then in a mysterious control room, Chinese soldiers watch Bart and Lisa and wonder what those inscrutable Americans are up to. And then we hear from a tall, muscular soldier saying that he will stop them because he is strong, because he is the Great Humongous. The other soldiers are less than impressed by the Great Humongous, and a certain barkeeper is less than impressed with Homer's tale.
Lisa's line of saying, like, you go straight through to China seemed weird to me. Like, that's such a kid thing to say, but I figure, like, Lisa knows that, no, he couldn't.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, she would know better.
If Bart's doing all this digging, you know, really, he needs to call the proper authorities, because you need to call before you dig, guys.
Oh, yeah.
You just start digging in your backyard. You might hit a line of some sort, and then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, if you get nothing out of this episode, any humor or any enjoyment, that's fine, but just know that you should call before you dig.
That's right. Should we go to that clip now?
Yeah.
Is this story going anywhere?
Yes, eventually I become king of the Morlocks.
But Morlocks are from the future.
You calling me a liar?
Wait a minute, Homer. If it's true, what about all the stuff you weren't around for?
Yeah. How'd you know the Chinese were spying on you?
Well, I just naturally assumed.
That is the stupidest story I ever heard, and I've read the entire Sweet Valley High series. I am sick of you drunks and your Shaggy Dog stories.
Sorry, Shaggy. Oh, now I gotta go home to that. Thanks a lot.
Oh, quit your belly aching, coffee boy. You're lucky I let you in here.
Jeez, Mo, you've been a real crank lately.
You take that back!
Now, you see, that's what I'm talking about. You're always pointing that shotgun at us.
And calling us dumbasses.
Which we're so not. But can you blame me? Every day it's the same old routine. I serve you drinks, you yak on and on and on, and I never get one stinking tip.
Maybe we'd tip you if you'd smile once in a while.
Well, what do you call this?
Don't do that.
All right, see, there's a lot to unwind with this clip and then just kind of the setup of the story right now that I just want to get into real quick.
Okay.
The Shaggy Dog with Sober Barney. This is very funny.
Yeah, I like that. It's fun. I like that sober Barney, you know, he's got some free time and he's more lucid. So he's like, I'm going to get a dog.
And Mo just pointing the shotgun at everyone's face, but like not, like everyone's like not even like phased. Like he's not going to shoot me. Yeah.
They're just used to it at this point.
And then do we talk about the visual of the Chinese satellite? I mean, you described it before we went to the clip. Like it even has the, like, you know, the pagoda, like you said, but also has, like, their camera just looks like an old, like, Nikon-type camera.
That's true, yeah.
And then, like, is it because Dana Gould, like, is he allowed to get away with that because he's adopted children from China?
I mean, I guess that's kind of true. Like, he has more interaction with the nation of China, but still, I don't know if that makes it okay.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, there's some...
So we don't know if it's borderline tasteless... visual joke, but you know those things exist over there, right, over in China.
Yeah,
but it's kind of like, you know, if you take a person's cultural architecture and then make that their identity.
Yeah, it's not good.
It'd be like I mean, yeah, but would it be fine if they had like, oh, it's the French are spying on us and their satellite looks like the Eiffel Tower
and they surrender?
Or yeah, they surrender. It's the Irish's a drunk dude as a satellite. I don't know. Maybe it's not. I don't know. Well, we're not here to decide that fate, are we?
Yeah, I can see, though, how it is a little reductive, and if somebody was offended, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So does this mean that this entire beginning, Homer's just been telling the story at the bar? Because it's interesting that, like, Bart's digging storyline, like, never gets answered, right?
Right.
It's a weird, like, why was he digging? No one knows. So this is all just in Homer's mind to get to tell him about the how he became the king of the Morlocks.
Which, as Lenny or Carl points out, they are from the future, and they're also, you know, fictional people from Jules Verne. Yeah. It's an interesting move to do this, to have, like, basically the first 5 minutes of the episode just be a fake flashback, I guess you'd call it. yeah.
And, like, and is that psychologist even a real person, or is he making that up? Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, was this just Homer remembering Brother's Little Helper but doing it poorly? Like, did he think that, like, McGuire was a Chinese man?
He vividly remembers Bart's Mountain Dew getting flat, if he's telling that story.
Right.
And he remembers the bridge column and the comic strip. He wasn't there for the Lisa and Bart dialogue, so he just assumed Lisa went there and said, "You must be digging to China." That's all Homer could think of. Ah.
Ah, that makes sense, because in Homer's mind, that might sound like a smart thing to say, like Lisa would say.
Ha, Steve, Simpson solvers, solved it again.
We're on the case. In the DVD commentary, Dana Gould says that the team was thinking of a way to start the show, and George Meyer, you know, famous writer for the show, said, "I just like how kids will sometimes just dig a hole." And so they went with that. And then Homer's story ending with the Chinese satellite was an attempt by Gould to kind of copy slash give an homage to John Swartzwelder. So he's trying to do a bizarre weirdo joke like John Swartzwelder will do. And that's kind of what he ended up with.
Well, this is his first episode that he's credited as writing as well, right?
Yeah. So he's kind of still getting his feet.
Look, if we were to write a Simpsons script, I think that's the same thing. Like, you know, you're inspired by the greats, and that's what Swartzwelder is one of the greats.
It's true, yeah.
So, yeah, I like that idea of, like, it's true. I mean, as a child, I imagine I just started digging holes for no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm. I know I did.
And that's what, you know, sand pits are for kids. I wonder if kids still play in sand pits. Probably not.
No, they're too busy on their TikToks and their...
Just how many times have I, like, dug through the local park? Because, like, local parks had... And, like, elementary schools had, like, sand pits.
Mm-hmm.
But all the times you would dig up, oh, what is this long-shaped rock? Oh, put that down. It's a dog turd.
Right, right, right. Oh, it's a needle.
I would lose a lot of toys, though. I think I lost, like, a Skeletor arm in a sand pit once when I was a kid.
Oh, man.
Like, you know how, like, the He-Man toys arms, like, were easily, you could just take them off and put them on again, like, with ease?
Yeah.
And I think I lost, I lost many, many swords and shields and, like, the little, like, chest plates because they could just, like, come off.
Yeah. I had a special...
capes.
Yeah, capes, too. Yeah. I had a special, like, I don't know if it was special, but it was special to me, a Destro action figure from the G.I. Joe line. He was the guy with the silver or gold-plated head who was the arms dealer for Cobra Commander, kind of Cobra Commander's second in command. And I remember I had his, it was him as an action figure, but he had his own, like, little mini flying machine that he would go on when he, like, went off and started his own bad guy team, kind of like saying, screw you, Cobra Commander, I'm going to start my own thing called Destro's Grenadiers. They were all very cool. But I just remember, you know, I was playing with him in the sand pit, and he was lost, and I never found him, and I'm still sad about it.
What was his team's name?
The Grenadiers.
Should have been, like, Destro's Disciples. That sounds better.
That's great, yeah. And, like, Destro's Destroyers. I mean, like, he's one letter away from Destroyer. Or Destroy. So, yeah. Grenadiers is a weird word.
Destro's Dickheads.
Ooh, I like that.
You just like dickheads, Steve.
Who doesn't?
All right, well, Mo realizes that he hasn't truly smiled since he nailed that rat with an ice pick. And while the all regulars agreed that it was an amazing throw, so... Just visually, you're just watching Mo with an ice pick, throwing it like a dart right to the rat.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Mo wonders how he lost his passion for the job, and he reflects on when he was in the bartending school, thinking he has the world by the jigger. So he walks over to a recently hung painting of his alma mater, which really illustrates his point. That's a very funny visual scene there. Mm-hmm. Homer, Lenny, and Carl notice a change in Mo when he mentions good old Swigmore U.
Gee, when you talk about that school, your voice fills with, what do you call it? Human feeling.
Yeah, maybe you should, what's the expression? Go back there.
What's the word I'm searching for? Yeah. A trip to the alma mater might really rekindle my love of getting people loaded.
But who'll run the bar while you're gone?
Ooh, ooh, pick me!
Pick me, Lenny!
Oh, pick me! I'm an urban Lenny!
Look, I don't want to start a tinkling contest here. Or do I?
Woohoo! Oh, don't look so proud. That was wind-assisted.
And if anybody wants potato chips or anything fancy, tell them to go to hell.
Can do. Now, don't you worry about a thing.
Hey, what are you doing? I gotta pay for that.
No, Mo. You've got it all wrong. People buy beer from you.
Yeah. Look, I gotta go.
I thought you said you had to go.
What did you think of that in the beginning, that kind of that clip of, like, how do you say human emotion?
Yeah, how do you say, I enjoyed it.
It was, what do you call it? Funny.
That was good stuff. I swear I keep hearing Mo say, I know he said tinkling contest, but I keep hearing tickling contest. Now I want to know what the tickling contest is, like, whoever can't laugh, right?
Right, yeah.
That's impossible, of course.
Right, and I think that Homer would be an easy loser because he seemed like he'd be very, very giggly.
I've heard you be tickled before, which is a weird thing to say.
It is.
But you very much ape Homer's laugh when you get tickled.
Yeah, and it's not intentional, and it's kind of a point of embarrassment, to be honest. Like, when I'm tickled, I do get a high kind of Pillsbury Doughboy Homer, like, hee-hee-hee kind of thing that I don't intend to do, but it just kind of comes out.
Well, it was something I think we, your friends, did to you in middle school. Didn't we all, like... like poke you like the Pillsbury Doughboy?
Yeah, my friends. Yeah, people would do that. People would be like, "Yeah, you're the guy that laughs like a girl, right?" And then they just poke me in my stomach. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah. Remember that time, like, in gym class, we all, like, put the soap in our socks and just, like, started beating you with the soap. It was hilarious.
Yeah, and I just was like, hee-hee-hee, that really hurts. Oh.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
It doesn't leave bruises, hey. So nobody will know.
Yeah. We're like, because we all watched Full Metal Jacket in a social studies class that day in sixth grade.
Of course, as you do. But only the first part, because the second part, it's just not as good.
It's like Stripes. Stripes is only good at basic training, and the movie is not as good when they go to war.
One of the many parallels between those two movies, yes.
But, like, Stripes came before Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah. I think we know who the real auteur is.
Ivan Reitman.
That's right. So Mo arrives in his old beat-up truck to the hallowed gates of Swigmore University, and those gates just happen to be swinging bar doors. On campus, he's students carrying six-packs of Dove, riding their bike while enjoying a martini, and, you know, juggling bottles a la cocktail. He then finds the old college clock, which says no drinking before 5, and all of the numbers have been replaced by the number 5.
There's something that just delights me for Swigmore University, just the concept that it's like, it's just a university, but people are doing bartender-esque things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very amusing to me.
Really funny. I just love that, like, quick gag of you see people on the quad, and, like, instead of playing hacky sack, they're juggling bottles, and there's this, like, girl with, like, a martini glass. It's a lot of fun.
Because, you know, bartending school, or academies, if you look them up, or if attended one, there, I think max is like a 40 hours. So that's about it. It's like you can get it done in like a week.
Yeah. And sometimes it's done like in a conference room of a hotel. Like,
yeah, I was doing some research on bartending academies. I wasn't like, is this really how bartending school looks? No, I wasn't doing like that, Steve. Don't get that in your head. There's just so many out there, and it's, yeah, a lot now you can just do online.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because, like, sometimes every bartender I ever talked to, none of them have ever went to quote unquote bartending school. They just say you learn on the job.
Yeah.
Best thing to do is, like, kind of start, like, if you want to bartend, start at something like a corporate place, like an Applebee's or a Red Robin, you know, places that have all those fun cocktail, you know, girl drink, drunk drinks, because it gives you a basic idea. And also, like, most of those corporate places are pretty diligent on control of alcohol flow and how much is going out and making sure like over pours and stuff like that usually don't exist in a place like that.
Yeah, exactly. Because they have so many corporate guidelines that they have to follow that they're going to make sure that their employees do that. So that, yeah, that's a good point, is like your Applebee's or Chili's, those kind of places are a good place to learn. Or, you know, even just being a bar back at any bar where you can just kind of watch and like, you know, basically just kind of wipe glasses and cut lemons and just watch how it's done. And you just pick it up as you go. In my experience, the hardest part about being a bartender is listening to people. That's it.
I'm sorry. So can you repeat that? I wasn't listening.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, listening to people tell the same stories over and over again, or to watch people who, you know, probably like, it's not that they're like, you're not over serving them or anything, but you just know that they probably shouldn't be drinking again. And it's just like, okay, here we go again. Like, yeah.
Luckily, on this podcast, we never repeat the same story over and over again.
No, never.
So you tell me about that time you lost your Destro. It was a good story.
Yeah, I was in a sand pit and like very special Destro, because he had left Cobra to join his own team, the Destro's Grenadiers, or maybe they're called Iron Grenadiers. But either way, he had his own like little flying machine and I lost the action figure. It's just such a cool action figure. His head was all shiny and gold.
What was the name of his group?
The Grenadiers.
It should have been like the Destro Disciples.
That's good. Or Destro Destroyers, because, you know, destroy is just like one letter away from Destro.
Or the Destro Dick Manglers.
Ooh, I like that.
Because they mangle G.I. Joe's dick.
That's right.
But you remember that one episode, they pull his pants down, they put an M80 in his urethra. The more you know, I mean.
Yeah, knowing is half the battle.
Yeah.
Don't put fireworks up your dick.
Yeah, okay. Hey, if you learned something today, this podcast, it's call before you dig and don't put fireworks up your urethra.
Yeah, but just solid advice from us.
All right. Let's go back to Moe's, and Homer's doing some cleaning, and he looks at the TV and is wondering, like, how long it's been since that TV's been cleaned in, because there's a boxing match going on. It's black and white, so that he just wipes the screen. It's a vibrant color. It's been a color TV the whole time. I know that's not how black and white TVs work and with color. This is a very funny, funny visual gag.
Really good.
Kind of Schwartz welding, I think. Mm-hmm. So good job there. So Carl orders another Duff and Homer provides it using his belly button as a bottle opener. And I want to see if that works here, Steve. I have this beer. Lift up your shirt.
Okay.
Ow. Yeah. Nope. Steve's just bleeding.
Ow, that hurt.
Yeah. And go get that fixed, Steve. Letty arrives with some takeout from Krusty Burger, hoping to eat at the bar. And Homer isn't sure what Moe would think of outside food. But looking at the photo of the barkeep pointing a rifle at the camera, Moe's not there. So Homer flips the picture, and behind that is himself, pointing, giving a thumbs up. So back-to-back framed photo.
I like that.
I think Moe would be fine without like food from the outside, because he doesn't serve food.
No, I mean, I'm guessing in Springfield, in the state in which whichever state it's in, it's not required to serve food. And he's probably like, I don't care, because
unless they have like a French fry corking fee. You know, if you take a bottle of wine to a restaurant, there's like a corking fee.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So you have to send like $15 to like have your own food.
Yeah.
So Lenny goes to sit down, but he trips on a bar stool and his Krusty Burger order goes in the air where it hits the ceiling fan. Food flies all over the bar, covering everybody in burger and condiments. Lenny apologizes profusely, but Homer isn't bothered in the least, saying that splattered food never hurt anybody. He then declares it to be dance time and plays Woolly Bully on the jukebox. So Homer, Lenny, Carl, and Barney hop on the bar and do a little dance, kind of Coyote Ugly or Full Monty style. Then the record switches to Color My World by band Chicago, and so the men follow along, dancing two by two in a, you know, a romantic fashion, until the record skips.
I just love how when the Color My World comes on and they just shrug and they, you know, just start slow dancing.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, very funny, Steve. I feel like the song Woolly Bully needs to be remade.
Ooh.
But like in a slower, like maybe more romantic or sad song version.
I like that, yeah.
Like, I just want to hear like toned down and depressing. Like, I forget who the artist was, but it was, you'll remember, it was that episode of Scrubs where they had the Muppets on, and then, do you remember that episode of Scrubs?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, at the end, like, the Sesame Street song is playing, but it's like this very like minor sounding, like sad cover of the Sesame Street that makes you like want to open your wrists up.
Right. It was super bleak, super depressing.
Sunny days sweeping the clouds away. Sesame Street.
So something like that with Wooly Bully.
I like it, yeah.
Oh, and credit to Joshua Radin for that cover of Sesame Street.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe like a Billie Eilish cover. You can barely hear it. And so like, yeah.
Wooly Bully.
Or how about Bjork?
I like the music of Wooly Bully.
Yeah, I think that would work.
Let's not do your Bjork impersonation on this podcast.
All right.
Homer tells everyone not to worry. He just has to hit the jukebox right, just like the Fonz would. So after giving an A, he punches through the glass and bleeds profusely, which is what he calls a hemorrhage mundo. As blood goes everywhere, Carl asks if he'll be okay, and Homer gives a thumbs up with a confident A as he passes out to blood loss. Scenes like this are hilarious with just the loss of blood, right?
Yeah, just so much blood, and like, it's funny, too, because he's, like, covered in, like, ketchup and mustard anyway, and they're just more blood. We Americans found this funny, but that is one of several scenes that were cut from the UK broadcast on Channel 4 because it was not good to their sensibilities over in jolly old England.
Sure, over there you could show boobs and wieners, but you can't show a cartoon bleeding.
That's right.
Or you have a dish called blood pudding, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Tower of London, ring a bell? Torturing? I don't know. Ever heard of it?
Colonization of everything.
Prince Andrew.
Spotted dick.
Simon Cowell.
Spotted dick.
You're just looking at me saying spotted dick, like, and pointing at me.
Yeah, it's the new game I play where I just, like, say things that I see.
Dame Judi Dench.
Yes. J.K. Rowling, not Simmons.
Oh, that's... Yeah, we have the good J.K. You guys have the bad J.K.
That's right. So back in the lecture hall of Swigmore University, a professor asks his class how much grenadine goes in a cosmopolitan. The students all murmur in confusion, but a voice speaks up to say that a cosmopolitan is made with cranberry juice. The class is impressed, and the professor recognizes Mo and calls him an old glass wipe. Back in Springfield, Homer goes on through a bartending rite of passage of his own. Meanwhile, Mo opens up to his old mentor.
Hello?
Yeah, I'd like to speak to a Mr. Tabooger. First name, Ollie.
Oh, Bart, my first prank call. What do I do?
Just ask if anyone knows Ollie Tabooger.
I don't get it.
Yell out, I'll eat a booger.
What's the gag?
Oh, forget it.
Professor, I'm burned out on bartending. When I first saw the movie Iron Weed, I thought, you know, this is for me. But now, well, I'm not so sure.
Nonsense. You were born to sling suds. The problem must lie elsewhere. Describe your tavern in one word.
Is crap hole one word?
Yes, if it's hyphenated.
Then I'll stick with crap hole.
Well, no wonder you're depressed working in that environment. If you want my advice, beautify your hole, and you'll beautify your soul.
Nice hole, nice soul.
It's good advice.
Did you ever see the film Iron Weed from 1987, directed by Hector Babico and written by William Kennedy, starring the one, Jack Nicholson, Meryl Streep, Carol Baker, Michael O'Keefe, Fred Gwynn, Herman the Monster himself.
Yeah.
Tom Waits, Nathan Lane's in it, James Gammon, and the rest.
I can tell you that I have not. I feel like if Cheech and Chong still made movies and they want to do a parody of the Marvel films, Ironweed would be a good name.
I've honestly never heard of this movie until this episode.
Me neither.
It was from 1987. So in 87, we were probably watching, what was our big movie in 87? Land Before Time?
Yeah.
Something like that. Field of Dreams is 89. Yeah, what's that? Masters of the Universe? That was probably 87, right?
Yeah, we were watching The Princess Bride or...
There you go.
The Lost Boys.
Sure. Well, Steve, this movie doesn't really pop up on my radar. An alcoholic drifter spends Halloween in his hometown of Albany, New York, after returning there for the first time in decades. So it's also a Halloween movie. How come we don't watch this during Halloween?
Yeah, we should do that for our October Patreon. Like, do Scooby, do scary, Jesus, do scary spooky, that's the word.
Okay.
Do scary, spooky films and close it out with Ironweed.
Now, is Ironweed, are we allowed to do that on our supposed Patreon? Because Mo mentions the movie, but I don't think Jack Nicholson's ever done a voice on The Simpsons, nor has Meryl Streep, right?
Meryl Streep has.
She's been on The Simpsons?
Meryl Streep was Jessica Lovejoy.
Oh, duh. That's right. And that's an episode we can never watch anyway.
Right.
So that's why I can't remember that.
Of course.
It's weird. I've been like wanting to go down the rabbit hole of like an actor's filmography, and I kind of want to go through like a Jack Nicholson like movie rewatch.
Yeah, I feel like I have a lot of blind spots for him.
Especially his earlier career. The later stuff, not so much, you know, like About Schmidt or As Good As It Gets, Mars Attacks, like the 90s, early 2000s stuff I'm familiar with. Although I never watched The Bucket List, but going back to, you know, the earlier stuff that I, you know, would know would be like Chinatown or Cuckoo's Nest, but... You know, I'd go back to watch, how far would I go for his a rewatch? I've seen The Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
In 1961. I don't think I'd start there. I wouldn't watch like an episode of Sea Hunt he was in, although maybe I would.
Five Easy Pieces, maybe, or...
He was in an episode of The Andy Griffith Show. I might have to watch that.
Yeah.
Two episodes. But then there's like Easy Rider. Like, I've seen that. So maybe it's like something that I've never seen Gone South.
I've seen a movie called Going South, but it was very different.
Like, Going South seems like it's a comedy Western romance. You know, that genre of films.
Right.
I don't know. I think because he's a great actor. But yeah, I'll have to go back. And Jack Nicholson has a lot of scary movies. And you have The Shining. You have The Witches of Eastwick, which, you know, it's not scary. But, you know, there's witches. Mm-hmm. He's like the devil. Batman. He's the Joker. Boo.
Boo. Yeah.
He's Hoffa, Jimmy Hoffa, very scary man.
Mm-hmm.
Wolf, don't you forget Wolf.
Oh, yeah, that's a scary movie.
Just marking my territory when he's like peeing in front of the guy. It's my favorite scene. Anger Management, that's a scary movie.
Anger is scary.
The Departed with Bart Simpson. It's called The Departed. That's an episode of The Simpsons. We should
talk
about The Simpsons, Steve.
All right. So Professor Huntington then invites Mo to look at the pond and consider... why the water sparkles so. The professor then tells Mo that he's dying. After Mo nods politely, he asks if there's anything he can do. Professor Huntington says no, unless Mo happens to have a cure for cancer. He sounds like, do you have a cure for cancer? And Mo doesn't, so the two men say goodbye to each other. Professor Huntington then walks into the pond, and Mo says like, hey, maybe you should take your shoes off before you go swimming, until he understands that the professor... is drowning himself to death, which is yet another scene that is cut by the UK.
I mean, I just will say it here, but what a bleak and hilarious scene.
It is.
Like, just even the animation of this and Mo just being so uncomfortable with this moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a really well animated scene. It's beautiful. Like, when he's talking about the water so sparkling, mm-hmm. I thought there was going to be a joke that it was like sparkling wine or something like that. It wasn't actually powder. There's a beat, there's a moment, and it's just like, I'm dying, and it's of cancer. Do you have a cure for cancer? Like, one of the diseases, you can't make comedy out of cancer.
No.
That's another lesson. Call before you dig, and don't make comedy out of cancer.
Right, right.
But I can see why the UK, kind of, because it's probably offensive to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. I mean, it's also interesting that Mo is in the role that he is, because so often nowadays... Or even, like, more recent episodes, not even just nowadays, but even, like, 10, 15 years ago, Mo would be the one to kill himself. Like, 2 weeks ago when we had the Last of the Red Hat Mamas, there was a joke about him jumping and trying to kill himself and landing on a hot air balloon twice. And so it's interesting to see that this is where he comes from, where his professor is dying of cancer, so he decides to kill himself by his own hand.
And is this a political commentary on assisted suicide in this country? And maybe we should look into it.
Ooh, yeah, I think so. I mean, we're not a political podcast, but that is a very good point.
Well, did you know that the professor is based off of Charles W. Kingsfield Jr. from the television series The Paper Chase? And the professor entering the lake is a movie called Being There, in whose ending is revealed that Mr. Chance can walk on water. I said that weird.
Huntington can't walk on water.
Well, the following day, Homer is on the way to the bar, singing to himself about walking down the street and singing what he's thinking. So after mentioning a dog he saw, Homer's tune is interrupted by a bar stool flying out the window of Moe's. A television set is thrown out of the other window, and Homer is sure that it's Teen Vandal smashing the bar. Worried that Moe is going to kill him, Homer rushes inside to find a demolition crew tearing Moe's apart.
Hey, Homer, stop! Stop! It's me! Sheesh!
Moe? Wrecking Moe's bar? What Well, I almost fainted, but then I didn't. What are you doing?
My professor said if I prettied up this dump, it would renew my zeal.
And it would look pretty, too.
And now, I want you to meet the guy who's gonna help bring Moe's into the 20th century.
I am Formico, the Dean of Design.
Hi, Formico.
My name must never be spoken.
Sorry. He seems nice.
Formica. Formichael.
Formichael. Formica.
Oh, you know what we forgot to mention? Because I had my weird Jack Nicholson tangent that the previous clip was Bart pranking Homer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we should talk about that. That's pretty iconic, especially back in 2001.
And it just proves to you that Bart's major enemy is Homer, because he can never get Homer.
He foiled his ruse. Really well done, too. Like, he just kind of shut him down.
Except for all the other times that Bart does get Homer. Like, you know, the episode where he shakes the can of beer for April's Fool Days and puts him in a coma. all right, never mind. This is the one time Bart wins.
Yeah, the one time. speaking of Homer being defeated, that night at the dinner table, Homer is depressed. Just when he's about to become the world's greatest bartender, it was snatched away from him. Still in bartender mode, he goes to refill Bart's water glass and Bart tells him to just leave the bottle. So he then stuffs a cigarette in Lisa's mouth and lights it, and she puts it out in her dinner, which is kind of rude to Marge, who, you know, spent all that time making a vegetarian dinner extra for Lisa, and she just puts her cigarette down on it. Rude.
I think it's hilarious because you see that scene so many times in movies when people just put their cigarette out into someone's food. Or usually it's like the bad guy putting the cigarette onto someone's food, like, F you, but with Lisa doing it, yeah, it's true. Why she should have done it at Homer's food.
Yeah, because you're right, it is a power move, like, you've got 3 days to get me my money, Johansson, and then you put your cigarette on their mashed potatoes or whatever. Just put it on your own food.
You went to comedy school.
I know.
His name Johansson.
Sorry.
Let's try this again. Okay, that's better.
McGillicuddy. Also, that scene of Lisa putting out the cigarette, yet another thing that was cut out by Channel 4 in the UK.
I mean, that's acceptable because it's a child depicting smoking, so I can see why they would cut that.
Yeah, it makes sense. Homer then tells a sleepy Maggie that he doesn't care where she goes, but she can't sleep there.
Well, the new Moe's is ready to open with a glass facade and a large lowercase M. And a typeface similar to M&M's. I was noticing that, like, the M looks like this M and M&M's, which is still kind of just like a courier new type of typeface, you know. While Homer thinks it looks like an alien headquarters, he asks his friends if they could see aliens running out of there, but then he looks around to see everyone has deserted him. So there's a long line to get inside the bar, but Homer is sure that friends of Moe will be allowed immediate entry. So he walks past the line of attractive people and tries to walk through the velvet rope when he's stopped by the bouncer. So Moe pops his head out and tells the bouncer, Cecil, that's okay. And Homer mocks the doorman, saying that Cecil's a girl's name. Is it?
I feel like Cecil, I think it's a boy's name. I mean,
yeah.
There's the John Waters film, Cecil B. Demented, and
based off of Cecil B. DeMille.
Right. And
guy.
And wasn't Sideshow Bob's brother Cecil?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Sure.
Those are all boys.
Homer's just dumb.
Yeah.
And names don't have genders anymore, right, Steve?
Exactly. And, you know, let's not confine ourselves to, like, the ideologies of, you know, old school gender norms. It's all good.
Absolutely.
Inside, Mo welcomes his friends slash patrons to the new M, which features all kinds of new decorations, such as
a model biplane,
numerous video screens depicting volcanoes, eyeballs, and opening flowers,
bubbling water shafts,
pink clouds painted on orange walls,
beanbag chairs,
bar stools on the ceiling,
rabbits suspended from the ceiling,
glass bubbles on the wall,
an oxygen bar,
and a giant hamster wheel.
Well, when Mo asks what the fellas think of the new spot, Lenny says, "It looks like it's from the not-too-distant future, somewhere in time and space." Okay. Homer remarks that the rabbits hung by straps are cute, and Lenny notices that one of them isn't moving, so Mo calls on an employee to change number 7, while Carl looks for a deeper meaning in the decor.
I don't get all this eyeball stuff. What are they supposed to represent? Eyeballs?
It's Po-Mo. Postmodern. Yeah, all right. Weird for the sake of weird.
Oh! Where are the bar stools?
Up there. Ain't it trippy?
Whatever. Just give me a Duff.
Oh, we don't serve Duff no more. We got a Malaysian beer that's better than Duff. It's made out of soy sauce.
Whatever. Just give me a Duff.
I like Homer. But just not even listening.
And it's like Homer not even listening. I'm sure there's beers made from soy sauce, right?
Yes. Yeah, I feel like that's probably a thing that I probably tried before. And it's probably fine. Like, the first sip is interesting. And then it's like, I don't want to drink this whole beer, but it was fun to try.
The monitors showing eyeballs are based on a similar decorations found in the elevators at the St. Martin's Lane Hotel, where the Simpsons staff hosted a Simpsons festival, Steve. I just remember that off the top of my head, and I wasn't reading that at all.
Good memory. Yeah, that sounds about right. There is a blender, though, because when Mo picks up the Malaysian beer and says how good it is, we see the bottle, and then we see a shot of Homer talking, and then you go back, and the bottle is turned into, it looks like a Duff, but the label is green, and the letters are all weird, but it's a different bottle.
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
I might find a blunder later in the episode.
Alrighty. Mo then introduces Formico to his beloved regulars. Formico unscrews the light bulb above Homer, Lenny, Carl, and Barney, leaving them in the dark. Formico takes Mo to meet some attractive young models, but not before having a velvet rope stanchion around the boys. Homer, who again is in the dark, tells his pals to look cool.
It's very bright in that bar then. Just,
yeah,
the amount of darkness that one little light bulb. It's crazy.
It is weird. And you think about, like, trendy bars. I always think of bars being dark.
Yes, exactly. This bar seems animated and not real.
That's right.
So at a nearby table, Mo is surrounded by models. When he asks if they're all from Russia, they enthusiastically respond with a da. And he asks if they find him attractive, and they all answer with a sad little da.
Aww.
So Barney, Homer, and Carl visit the oxygen portion of M. And Barney D doesn't get the hype, and Carl gets the bands. And he asks for Lenny to stand on his chest, but Lenny's trapped in a human-sized hamster wheel. As he puts it, it's a creative design run amok. And Homer has had enough and goes to give Mo a piece of his mind, but finds it difficult without the assistance of some more oxygen. Remember when oxygen bars were a thing for like 20 minutes?
Yeah, it was a weird, like, little trend where people were like, oh yeah, I gotta get my specially sourced air.
Well, meanwhile, Mo learns a little bit more about his new model acquaintances.
After Chernobyl, my penis is falling off.
And penis is Russian for...
Well, we want our bar back.
Yeah, this place is crazy.
All these beautiful people make us feel like losers.
Yeah, you'd be having a great time if you'd stayed in your dark spot.
Oh, so you're ashamed of it. Well, you've turned into a big phony.
Hey, nobody calls Mo St. Cool a phony.
All of this yelling is taking away my horny.
Is it? Oh, that's it. That's Dagmar, Julian. Throw this bum out.
I'll throw myself out, thank you. I believe I had a hat. Suckers!
Well, at least Homer got a free hat.
Yeah, I like that gag of him throwing himself out and then getting a free hat out of it. Very nice.
But to the fellow that lost the hat, I feel bad for him.
That's a bummer, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Once again, a couple more edits from the UK. Homer needing the oxygen I guess they don't have oxygen in jolly old England. And also the penis Chernobyl joke were both cut out.
So what did they air in the UK? Just
I don't know. This has been a short episode.
Yeah. They must have just like spliced in some old episodes of Doctor Who. Makes me laugh.
Probably had like Benny Hill chasing some bikini babe while Yakety Sax plays.
Lenny Hill? I like that.
My eye, I'm not supposed to get boobs in it. So in the garage of 742 F Green Terrace, Homer's building something when Bart walks up and asks what he's doing. Despite it being pretty obvious, Homer tells his son that he's turning the garage into a tavern, the kind that Moe's used to be. Lisa thinks this is pretty far to spite Moe, but Homer assures her that it's not about spite, but rather petty revenge and getting back at that traitor, Moe. He then asks for her help nailing a urinal to the wall.
And it just takes one nail in the middle of like a ceramic.
Yeah.
Doesn't break. It's very funny. Very Simpsons joke there. I feel like Lisa's kind of dumb in this episode.
That's true. Yeah.
Marge warns Homer that running a bar is a full-time job. And she reminds him that he doesn't even do his full-time job, you know, at the plant. So Homer responds that when he's passionate about something, he sees it through to the end. He then moves some boxes to reveal a robot he's been working on, which is made up of like a bucket for a head and corks for ears and nose, a large bucket for a body, and a broom and tennis racket for arms. And the robot asks his father, which of course is Homer, to give it legs. Homer throws the contraption into the street, and the robot shouts out, "Father!" But Homer shakes his head, and the robot flails its arms to move down the street and giving Homer one last sad look. And this is like up there with the lake scene. It's so bleak. Homer's created a sentient life, apparently, and this gives up on it.
Yeah, because it doesn't build it legs, but you build a voice personality.
But not enough time to build some legs. Well, let's go over to the M. The bar is full, but the conversation leaves something to be desired, according to Mo.
That is so interesting.
So what you talking about? Something interesting?
I was just comparing Kurosawa's films to Herzog's.
Uh-huh. Carry on.
My diet lets me eat anything I want for 1 minute a day.
My youth consultant gives me Botox injections in my head, neck, and navel.
Hey. Hiya, pal. So, how about them current events? Oh, you got one of them cell phones, huh? Yeah, no cord at all on those. Hey, game's on.
Hey,
I'm watching that. Come on.
Unless you're being ironic, turn that off now.
I'm glad you ain't around to see what a mess I made.
Oh, but I am.
What?
You've discarded your loyal regulars for a mob of soulless snobs.
Well, at least the tips are good.
Are they, Mo? Take a look.
Oh! Hey, why are you mocking me? We're friends.
Oh, right. Sorry.
I figured this goes to show that bar chatter is just always going to be boring.
It's not boring when you're drunk.
That's true. I think that's the big thing is that if you're a bartender, you want to be entertained, drink on the job.
Or as a school bus driver.
That's also true. Yeah.
Because kids say the same thing, right? Like drunk people.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be entertained that way. Just kidding. Don't drink and drive.
No.
Ah, why do I got to say that in every episode? Oh, sorry. Because it was a court order thing to say. I love how the professor is, as a ghost, mocking him. The laughter.
It's really funny. And then, like, Mo being like, I thought we were friends.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You really see, like, where Mo's personality came from because of his professor, you know?
Yeah, a lot of stuff comes from Professor Huntington. It's true. So Homer, Lenny, Carl, and Barney sing "I Won't Drink at Moe's" to the tune of Joan Jett's "I Love Rock and Roll," saying that Homer's garage is all they need. Homer adds that Moe is a big jerk, and then calls him a she-male, which is pretty problematic even then, I feel like, and it was also removed from the British version of the episode.
Do you think J.K. Rowling was okay with that?
Yeah, probably. She's like, I love that as much as I love the Philosopher's Stone.
Because it's the philosopher, not philosopher.
That's right. So Lenny calls for another beer. So Homer shouts out to the barkeep, and Marge hands out cans of Dove, and she wonders why Homer isn't just running things.
He responds that it's a family bar, and Bart and Lisa, who are busy with bar back duties, sleepily ask if they can go to bed. And Homer says Lisa can once she's done cutting lemons, which, as she points out, they aren't even using lemons. Homer mocks his daughter, saying that she's so sweepy, and she doesn't even know what she's saying.
And Lisa does make a good point, though, because they're just having beer, so.
But here's my problem, is like, she's just cutting a lemon in half. How long does it take for you to cut 5 lemons, Lisa?
It's true.
And you just cut them half, but then you gotta, you know, cut those into smaller sizes, you know, for the drinks. It doesn't take long. You can get that done in less than a minute.
Lemon duty is pretty easy, and yeah.
Bart has the harder job. He just has to clean.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing a bad job with that. Her knife skills aren't that great. Her knife skills are the skills of an 8-year-old.
Yeah. You couldn't hit a rat with an ice pick.
No. Teach your kids knife skills early age.
That's right.
Actually, I hate it when you see, like, YouTube videos or TikTok videos of parents, like, teaching their kids to cook, and they're, like, 5 years old, and they gotta be on a step stool, but them cutting an onion is, like, way better than us ever cutting an onion. You're like, the fucking piece of shit, kid.
Oh, yeah, and, like, they'll, like, stitch it with, like, it on, like, a TikTok, and they'll stitch it with, like, a good chef, who's like, oh, that's good knife skills on that 4-year-old, and it's like, ah, shut up, that's better than I can do. I hate it.
But still, like, Gordon Ramsay still calls the kid a donkey.
Yes.
There's a little devil's advocate pinball machine in the background, Steve.
Yeah, I thought that was fun. Good little callback.
Do you think Homer bought it, or he went and like robbed the Quickie Mart?
He probably robbed the Quickie Mart.
Yeah,
I think. Yeah,
who robs the Quickie Mart?
We do.
All right. Well, Mo steps outside and sees the spotlight shining M's in the sky, and has a realization. He's kidding himself. He isn't Mo saying cool. So he rips off his fancy suit in one piece and tosses it in a nearby trash can. So back in his usual bow tie and apron, he walks down the street wondering how he could toss his friend out in the cold with no place to get liquored up. Just then, he hears laughter, music, and jubilation coming from the car hole, not too far away. As Homer rocks out, Lenny wonders how he got such talented performers to play in his bar.
How'd you get R.E.M. to play in your garage?
I told him it was a benefit. They think they're saving the rainforest.
Suckers!
Michael, are you sure these guys are millionaires?
Come on, would a poor person have a bar in his garage?
Hey guys, stand around me. I can't go with Lenny watching.
So, gotta pee, huh?
Oh, forget it.
What the? You can't open your own bar.
Seems to me I already did.
But it's illegal. You can't run a bar in a private residence.
Bar? I see no bar. This is a hunting club, which is permitted by state law to serve beverages of a refreshing nature.
Hunting club?
You lied to us.
Michael, no!
That's not the REM way.
You're right. Let's recycle those shards and get out of here.
I like Lenny. Peeing, huh?
Yeah, gotta pee, huh? The band REM. You know, it's like, to me, this, like, when I think about this episode, which I hadn't seen in years, I think of this as the REM episode, but they show up at 17 minutes and 25 seconds into the episode. It's interesting.
Well, I mean, they have an off-screen time for their cameo. It's not really even a cameo. There's plenty of screen time. You know, Aerosmith was on only for a couple seconds, and
that's true.
The Ramones, you know. I think it's okay, Steve. They're allowed.
Yeah. Mike Scully said that they've been told that REM were big fans of the show, and their addition to this episode was a last-minute addition. But there was some controversy because at the time, Bill Berry was their former drummer. He had left the band, and they didn't want him to be in the episode. So you barely even see the drummer in this episode, but it's designed to be modeled after one of their session drummers at the time.
This is when, this is probably around the, it's close to the Reveal album. So right around then. Okay. Well, Mo checks the bylaws and finds that hunting clubs must actively engage in the sport of hunting. I always like this beat too, because it seems like a little time has passed and Mo's been like reading the charter for like hours.
Yeah.
The hunting club. Oh, you guys have to hunt too. It's very funny. Homer assures Mo that he'll be due that in the morning. And Lisa objects, But Homer tells to get back to your lemons. And then we see what's, of course, cutting lemons. Again, not doing a great job. The next day, Homer and Lisa are in the woods. Lisa feels that it's not fair. Why should an innocent animal die just because Homer and Mo are fighting? And Homer claims that his hands are tied and then pulls out a silver platter with cranberry sauce, stuffing, and potatoes. So he then calls on a turkey to join its friends. And as he cocks his rifle, Lisa is doubtful and walks away, only to hear a familiar voice.
Do you really think the turkey's just going to climb onto the plate?
I would.
Psst, Lisa.
Mo?
Listen, I don't like you and you don't like me, but we both want to stop Homer from shooting a turkey.
You don't like me? I like you.
You do? Then I like you too. Here, have a towelette.
Here, turkey, turkey, turkey. Turkey, 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 turkey. Nobody's gonna kill you.
All right, from now on, no talking. You want to signal me? Use this bird call. Ow! Ow! Not the face! Ooh! Ooh! Okay, the face! Oh! Oh, that actually feels good after the crotch.
All right, turkey. Where are you? Turkey's the only animal smarter than man. What the hell is that? A turkey!
Dad's gonna slaughter that poor turkey.
Not if I scare it away with this cougar call.
I got a question.
Absolutely.
Why would Homer take Lisa hunting with him?
Yeah, it seems like a Bart thing, right?
I mean, she clearly isn't going to be into hunting at all. But also, you know, she's probably sleepy from the night before because she's up all night poorly cutting lemons. He doesn't need her to go hunting with him. It's just weird.
I think it's because he wasn't going to take her. She insisted on going to try to talk Homer out of it.
Maybe. That makes sense.
I solved it again, Simpson Solvers. At it again.
We did it. Yep.
And he should have brought Lenny and Carl and Barney with them because, you know, they're part of the hunting club.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the one scene that I think has lived in my mind for a while. Is the Mo telling Lisa, listen, I don't like you and you don't like me.
Very funny.
It is great to... I'm going to start saying that to kids, too. I don't like you and you don't like me, but we're going to have to do this. And they'll start crying, like, why don't you like me?
Also, who are you?
that'll be fun. And then Homer, not knowing what a turkey is, and then I like the idea of the bald eagle attacking Mo, but then Mo's like telling the eagle, not the face, but the bird nose, and it goes to the crotch.
Right. I mean, after a while, it might start to feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
You notice that's one thing that England didn't cut out is some bald eagle crotch action because they're jealous of America.
Yeah, what's England's national bird? Is that just a woman? Because that's what you call a lady in England. Like, look at that bird over there.
Mm-hmm. Like that time that Mick Jagger had a threesome. It was two birds with one stone.
Steve, do you want to know the national bird of Britain land? I'll give you a hint. Don't look it up.
Okay.
This bird likes to hang out with bats, man.
Is it a nightwing?
Yes. The bird nightwing. No. Let's try it again, Steve. This bird also likes to wear little green booty shorts and funny little green slippers.
Oh, it's a robin.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's it.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, a bald eagle could definitely eat a robin.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So we win. USA, USA.
That's going to be my supervillain character, Bald Eagle. Basically just a ripoff of Spider-Man's The Vulture, just an old bald guy. Who
yeah, that's true. Lies. It is, isn't it? I wonder if that joke's ever been made in a Spider-Man comic. Like, he's like, I'm the Vulture. And then Spider-Man's like, more like the Bald Eagle.
I like it, yeah.
That's a Peter Parker quip.
Mm-hmm.
All right, call
quips
up
and quips. That's what Spider-Man's all about.
Yeah, call up Stanley. Tell him I'm gonna pitch that joke.
Okay, true believer. Excelsior. So the turkey runs away, causing Lisa and Mo to jump for joy in the bushes. Homer assumes that Mo's figure is actually a cougar and fires. Mo cries out, "Ow, my leg!" And Homer says to himself that he got that cat right in the leg. This is very funny. Lisa informs Homer that he shot Mo, causing him to faint for real this time. But when Homer hits the ground, he finds that his head is stuck in a bear trap, which is the final piece that was cut for UK. later, Moe's Tavern is back to its former self, and Lisa wonders how it got back to normal so quickly. And Moe tells her that it's a snap when you use certified contractors, like the ones that you find in your local Yellow Pages. And I feel like we probably should explain what Yellow Pages are to people under the age of, I don't know, 30.
They can go to the library and look it up themselves through the card catalog.
Yeah, just use a microfiche.
Yeah. So they cut Homer's head out of the bear trap in the UK. Is that because either violence or they don't want the British people to find that us Americans have invented the bear trap?
I think so, because I think there's just a lot of bears roaming England, and they don't know what to do about it.
They don't pay the bear tax there.
Exactly.
They pay the Homer tax.
So one tax that they don't pay. USA.
And it's a funny scene, too, because like, it's just a still shot of Moe's. Like, there's no animation. It's just all dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So the animators got a day off of that, so they didn't have to animate Lisa talking to Moe.
It's great.
Yeah. Well, Homer apologizes to Moe for shooting him, and Moe is quick to forgive. Like his father always said, eventually everybody gets shot. And in America, that sure is true.
Absolutely.
Marge is relieved that the two men are friends again, so they all have Thanksgiving dinner at the bar. I didn't know this was a Thanksgiving episode.
Nope.
Write it down on the list, Steve. But anyways, we're going to do a clip here, because Homer notices some unwelcome guests.
Hey, who invited the hippies?
I did. You owe REM an apology for eco-fraud.
All right, I'm sorry. But I will not save the rainforest.
Good enough. Let's eat.
And we should all be thankful to Michael, Peter, and Mike for supplying this beautiful turkey, made entirely of tofu.
Tofu and gluten.
I'm thankful I ate before I came.
Oh, come on, Bart. Smell those curds.
Mmm, curds.
And I'm thankful I get to spend Thanksgiving with my family, these alternative rockers, and my favorite bartender.
Ah, here you go, pal.
And here you go.
Kind of insensitive for REM to vegan people who have celiac disease. They can't have that turkey.
No, it's true.
Yeah, someone needs to cancel REM now.
Now who's the monster?
I told you, Steve, I was going to have a blunder.
Okay.
So when you see Homer putting the money in the tip jar, right? It goes in, but then we have the shot of them hugging each other at the end of this episode. The money's gone.
Huh. Oh, look at that.
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
So many blunders in this episode, Steve. But yeah, that's how the episode ends. We got no after credits. Everything is back to the way it was. The status is now quo.
Indeed.
So, Steve, I'm going to request that we take a break, come back, and wrap up the episode.
Let me think about that. Okay.
All right, folks. We'll be right back. And we're back. All right, Steve, let's wrap up this week's episode entitled Homer the Moe, or to you Disney Plus people out there, Homer to the Moe. We'll talk about some of our favorite jokes, maybe give a most valuable jokester in MBJ to a character. Talk about favorite scenes, of course, give a nice little review, find out what we're watching next week. But before we do all that, there's things from the episode that can make great gifts. So we like to scour through said episode and find the items that might make our co-host say, thank you, I'm going to use this gift. And I thought Steve could use something on his wall. You know, his wall's a little bare there. You guys can see over there. Camera A, turn to Steve's wall there. Right there.
Pretty bare.
So I thought this frame photo of Moe pointing a shotgun at you. But wait, there's more.
Oh.
If you turn it around, it's Homer giving a nice thumbs up.
Aw, that's very nice. I will use that.
Okay, and then I have Michael Stipe's recipe for turkey. Tofurkey, excuse me. Sorry.
Ah, yes. Well, that's very nice, Craig. And I got you something for the wall, too. And I think mine is also pretty functional, especially, you know, after you've had a few drinks. That's right. I got you a urinal nailed to the wall. And, you know, in case you are thirsty, I did get you some lemons cut in half poorly by an 8-year-old girl.
And is does the urinal hooked up to any pipes or anything into the water, or is it just...
I don't like to get fussy with it. It is what it is.
All right.
There's a nail in there. It should be fine.
I do like to pee. Thank you very much.
I know how much you love to urinate.
I mean, dare I say, I do it multiple times a day. Am I that weird?
That's pretty weird. I mean, I shit multiple times a day, but pee, usually only once, if that.
Well, Steve, I need to know, what made you laugh in this episode?
Well, first of all, I got to say that the Swigmore University in general is very funny, but Professor Huntington, you know, walking into the river, pretty good stuff. The bleak made me laugh. Also, the robot just kind of swimming in the middle of the street, like trying to move at all. That's funny to me. Yeah, those are probably my two favorite scenes, but a lot of funny in here. I think that Professor Huntington is a really good time. Moe's frustration with Moe's is very funny to me. I don't know, just like him being annoyed with like Homer telling this weird story about Bart digging a hole and then becoming king of the Morlocks. That's pretty funny. What about you, Craig?
I feel bad for copying you and not having an original answer, but that's exactly it. The Homer's robot, Professor Huntington in the lake. I'll also mention, shout out to even Moe in the beginning, too, with him pointing the shotgun at everybody is hilarious to me. And Lisa cutting lemons for some reason is enjoyable. And then, yeah, Bart at the beginning with the nonsense of digging. You know, Professor Hunting probably gets the MVJ.
Yeah.
Homer, of course, is the funny stuff as well. But I'll give it to Professor Huntington, RIP. Who does the voice of Huntington? I mean, it's either going to be Shear or Castellana, maybe?
Yeah, it's Dan doing the role.
It very much sounds like Michael York.
That's exactly what I was going to say, yeah.
And I'm wondering if when they started using like the old like professor-type character, hiring Mike York, maybe it hurts Dan's voice to do that character. Because if you try to talk like this, you know, your throat kind of, it hurts a little bit.
It does,
right?
Yeah.
Like this. So maybe that was, can we find someone that can do this voice? Because it'd be great if it was Michael York, but it's that Michael York archetype.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'll give it to that.
Yeah, I think that Moe is a good runner-up, and I think that even like REM are contenders for MVJ just because they had fun with what they're doing. But yeah, I think that Professor Huntington definitely gets it for me.
All right. Well, Steve, what did you think of this episode altogether?
It is not a plot-driven episode, I feel. Like, the plot seems kind of incidental from the beginning with, you know, just basically the first 5 minutes just being a made-up, or maybe not a made-up story, but a story from Homer's recollection. And then Moe going back to his university to then turn Moe's into, like, this fancy kind of hipster bar. And then wrapping it up to be a Thanksgiving episode with REM, it feels like kind of a mishmash of a lot of ideas. And I know that at the time, I was probably frustrated with The Simpsons kind of losing the plot, as it were. And I think that critics felt the same way. However, I got to say, like, watching it this time around, I had a lot of fun with it. And I thought the jokes were funny. I thought that it was a silly, kind of lighthearted episode. Like, I don't know that it's going to be anybody's, like, favorite episode. But I don't know. Like, I've got not a lot to complain about. Like, it's a good time and it's goofy. The Homer-Moe dynamic of Homer kind of getting upset with Moe and then them eventually realizing that they have a good friendship, I think that's always fun to explore. Lisa being kind of dumb and useless throughout the episode is interesting. Putting out the cigarette, cutting lemons poorly. I think all in all, this is a fun one. It's like not the best episode ever, but it is like, it's a really solid like B- episode that I am not at all mad at. So I think if I had to give it a score, you know, the band REM, they have 15 studio albums. So from Murmur to Collapse in the Now, I'm going to give this a solid document.
Yeah, document. Great album. That is that the one with It's the End of the World as We Know It? I think that one's on there.
I think so, yeah.
Night Swimming. I think Night Swimming's on that album. I like that tune.
The one I love?
Yeah, the album, the document. That's the one you like? The one,
yeah,
I mean?
That's the one I love.
Yeah, the album, document.
By the band.
No, REM. Okay, dumb. Okay, we can't do
yes.
This. Yeah. No, not the band Yes, the band REM.
Who?
No, not the Who. Okay.
Sorry.
I said we were done. No, I agree. This was a fun episode. And for Dana Gould's first episode, this kind of hits all of the Simpsons like jokes that I want. I don't know how long it had been, but like the Bart calling Moe up trope of pranking Mo. They stopped kind of doing it after a certain amount of seasons. Mm-hmm. And so seeing that joke come back was great. And yeah, the beginning, very Schwartzweldery with the Bart just digging, not knowing why. And like, I think there's more like psychological thing about Bart doing it. Whereas, you know, they're like Scully just say that, oh, you know, this is what kids do. Sure. But maybe it's just kids. That's when we start like deep thinking, right? Like that we start trying to find ourselves and think about life mm-hmm. at that age. And, you know, the wackiness of the cartoon of like Mo demolishing Mo's and then making it to the swanky club, you know, let's not talk about like the finances of it. Who knows? It hit all the beats, I think. And yeah, there's some questionable jokes, like, of course, the she-male line. And then are we okay with the Chinese satellite being a stereotype? But again, we're not the PC police. We're the Apple police.
That's right.
Dumb. So yeah, I had a thought with this episode, and like you, I think when it came out, I probably was annoyed with it, but that was just your young, late teens, early 20s self, where everything sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But coming back to it, I had a lot of fun and a great Mo episode. So if I had to give it a ranking, Mo does attend bartending school, and I thought, you know, what are some of the drinks bartenders absolutely hate to make? So I found a couple of websites, from BuzzFeed to eatthisnotthat.com. So you have like Mojito or a Bloody Mary, especially after 5 p.m., a Moscow Mule, Pina Coladas, a Vodka Martini, a Tequila Sunrise, Whiskey Sours, a Chocolate Martini, anything espresso or coffee drinks, even White Russians. Who wants a Bloody Mary after 5 p.m.? Or who wants to drink any drink that has like a cream in it, like a White Russian at a bar after 12 a.m.? Do you trust dairy, Steve, after 12 a.m.?
No. I barely trust any bar dairy in general.
Yeah. So if I'm going to rank if I was a bartender, the worst drink, Steve, in your opinion, what would be the worst drink as a bartender to make?
I would say anything blended, like daiquiri or...
Yeah, that's there. Like pina colada, that's an example.
Yeah, unless it's like a tiki bar, then it's fine. But yeah, I think that anytime you have to wash a blender, it's a pain in the ass.
I will say that then this episode, it's a whiskey sour.
That's fair. I think that's a very good, very astute rating that would make Professor Huntington proud.
Yeah, it's a drink that... if you order at a bar, I don't think a bartender is really going to be annoyed with it. Just if you do, don't order top shelf whiskey.
Yeah.
That's because of a waste of whiskey. Order the bottom shelf. The well.
You're just wasting your money anyway because you can't tell.
No. So yeah, enjoyable episode, Steve. I hope you all had fun with it as much as we did.
Yeah.
But now it's time to have fun with next week's episode, Steve. And we're not going to need that wheel of random because in the year of 2024... on the date of April 21st, there will be a new episode of The Simpsons from season 35. And that's episode 15. Steve, what do you think the title of that episode would be?
Well, I mean, this week we had Homer the Mo, or Homer to the Mo. And I don't know why we always assume that when we review an old episode, that the new episode will be related in any way. But what if Homer was a different character from Springfield? Like, I don't know. What about Homer... to the Mill House.
I would love to see that episode, but Steve, of course, that's not the title. It's actually called Cremains of the Day.
Hmm.
Steve, what do you think the premise of Cremains of the Day would be?
Well, of course, that's a take on the film Remains of the Day, which is with Daniel Day-Lewis and is about something.
2 hours long.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I know that cremains are... you know, the leftovers from, or not the leftovers, but it's what you get when you burn a person.
Usually when I burn a person, I go, ooh, you burnt.
Oh, yeah, you're a regular Jeff Ross. I'm going to say that cremains, I'm going to say that they wouldn't go as far as to, like, burn a human. So maybe they burn an animal. I'm going to say that Agnes Skinner's beloved parrot that we all know that she's always had dies. And, Homer and Agnes have to go cross country to spread the ashes at a bird sanctuary in Biloxi, Mississippi. And along the way, they discover each other both in friendship and in lust.
What about the bee story?
Oh, and the bee story. Lisa becomes a knife sharpener despite her inabilities to cut a lemon well, but she's good at, like, honing knives.
I'd be curious to watch this episode, but unfortunately, that's not it.
Ah, damn.
No. The description goes like this. Homer dies, and they burn him. The end.
Oh, wow.
No. Even I had to make a joke there. But it is about Homer, so that's good. So you got that part right.
Yay.
The description here reads, when someone in Homer's life passes away, he and some guys from Moe's go on a road trip to scatter the ashes.
Oh.
Huh. So, in my mind, there's no spoilers yet, but I could probably give you a spoiler because we have released official image here. So I don't know if you want me to describe it, but it got me thinking how it connects to this last episode we just watched. You know, I'm thinking the whole time when Homer's working at Moe's, how come we haven't seen the two barflies, Larry and Sam?
Mm-hmm.
And Steve, when I'm reading this description, it says he and some guys from Moe's go on a road trip to scatter the ashes. Can I spoil something for you? Am I allowed to spoil something? I mean, everyone else might have seen this image on the internet.
Yeah, and I'll see it soon enough next week. So yeah, go ahead and spoil it for me, Craig.
Steve, it's one of the barflies.
Oh no.
Everyone's beloved barfly, is the one who dies, spoilers, again.
Not
Yeah. Now, Steve, do you remember which one he looks like?
Is he the bald or the hat?
Exactly. So I'll just leave it with that. You guys have to figure out which one he is.
Okay.
Don't know if he's ever talked, but I feel like there's always, like, when the new season starts, like Al Jean always says, like, oh, this is going to happen, and a major character might die. Did he ever say at the beginning of the season, like, a beloved Springfield character is going to die?
I don't think so, but also, was ever beloved?
No. I'll have you know, though, he is on Tapped Out. So what are they going to do? They're going to delete that character from Tapped Out now?
It's going to change the way I play the game completely.
Or will they just turn him into, like, an angel?
Maybe.
I think we're going to have to say, grab your tissue boxes, everyone, for next week's very, very sad episode of The Simpsons.
I'm going to be masturbating a lot?
No, I'm crying, Steve.
Okay.
We're going to be eye-cumming, not penis-cumming. Well, folks, thanks for listening. Let us know what you think about Homer to the Moe or Homer the Moe by contacting us on social media like Instagram or YouTube at 130simpsons or just email us at 130simpsons@gmail.com.
And hey, if you're so kind, you can go to your favorite podcatching app, leave us 5 stars or the equivalent, but you don't need to write a real review. Just tell us what you learned in bartending school. And hey, while you're there, you can click on the microphone, leave us a voicemail, and tell us your favorite cocktails to order, your favorite cocktails to make, and your favorite alternative band to have Thanksgiving with.
And when you're done with all that, go to our TeePublic site, teepublic.com/user/annoyedgruntboys, for some Annoyed Grunt merch. All right, folks, thanks again for listening. Tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell your friends at the bar to listen to this podcast, because we need more listeners like you.
That's right. Thank you so much, and be on the lookout for more episodes like this one every week from the Simpson Solvers themselves, the Annoyed Grunt Boys.
All right, for this week, I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Craig.
And I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Steve.
And remember, all this yelling is taking away my horny.
Nice hole, nice soul.
I'll eat a booger.